Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during January. As the gift-giving season comes to an end, maybe now you've got a shiny new telescope to call your own. Congratulations! You're on the way to discovering many amazing things in the night sky. But here's a tip. Fumbling with unfamiliar screws and knobs out in the dark and cold is no fun. So set up your scope completely indoors and make sure you understand how it works before taking it for a test drive. Then go outside during daylight, when you can see what you're doing, to check the focus and to align the finder scope on a distant tree or utility pole. You'll find lots more telescope help at skyandtelescope.com. And here's another tip. You don't need a telescope to enjoy the beautiful winter sky. Just bundle up very, very warmly, don't forget your head and feet, and come along with me. 2009 opens with one of the best meteor showers of the year. The quadranted meteor shower peaks in the first week of each January, and usually we can count on the quadranteds to give us a brief but intense burst of shooting stars. These meteors get their name from Quadrans Muralis, an obsolete constellation near the handle of the Big Dipper. The meteors seem to radiate from that point in the sky. In 2009, this short, sharp shower climaxes before dawn on Saturday, January 3rd. The actual peak should come around 5 a.m. Pacific time, and that means that viewers in western North America will have the advantage over those of us farther east. The moon won't be a factor, so you might see roughly one meteor per minute if your sky is very dark and free of light pollution. Now, if you're not a morning person, don't fret about missing the quadrantids. The great thing about winter is that the sky can be incredibly clear, making the stars seem all the more like dazzling gems. They'll be especially pretty a few days after full moon, which is on January 10th, so that moonlight won't interfere. Look to the upper left of where the sun sets, and you'll have no trouble spotting Venus. It's almost too bright to seem real, and in fact, people unfamiliar with the night sky sometimes mistake it for a UFO. Or sometimes you'll hear people refer to Venus as the evening star. Anyway, right now Venus is reaching the climax of an evening showing that will last all winter. If you've got a really clear view to the southwest, and if the horizon there is cloud-free, here's something to look for early in the month. About a half hour after sunset, find Venus in the twilight sky. Now, clench your fist, hold it at arm's length, and look three fists to the lower right of Venus toward the sunset point. If the sky is clear, you might see one or two dim stars in the twilight glow along that imaginary line. If you see only one, it's probably Jupiter. If you see two, the dimmer one is Mercury. Look early and often. By mid-month, they'll both be too low to see. Because it orbits closer in than Earth does, Venus is always generally near the sun in the sky. On the 14th, the two are as far apart as they can get. That's when Venus reaches what astronomers call its greatest elongation. On that evening, it'll be 47 degrees from the sun, about five fists, and it'll remain up in the sky for up to 4 hours, depending on your latitude. As darkness deepens, turn around to your left so that you're facing east. Soon you'll see the stars of Orion, the Great Hunter, striding up from the eastern horizon. Look in particular for a trio of bright stars in a vertical row. These mark Orion's belt, and there's nothing else like them anywhere in the sky. Now look to the left of the belt by about the width of your fist. That bright star is called Betelgeuse. It marks the hunter's shoulder. Maybe you've heard it called Betelgeuse, like that weird movie character. Use whatever works for you. Study Betelgeuse a bit, and maybe you'll notice that it's got a warm, almost peachy color. That's because this star is a red supergiant, a truly massive star that has swollen to tremendous size in its old age. How big is big? If Betelgeuse were at the center of our solar system, then not only Earth, but even Mars would be orbiting inside the star. But Betelgeuse still looks like a pinpoint in the sky to us, because it's very far away, about 400 light years. To the right of Orion's belt, again about a fist away, is another very bright star that marks the hunter's knee. This star, called Rigel, shines with an intense blue-white light. Rigel is roughly twice as far away in space as Betelgeuse, yet it's a little brighter. Why so? It turns out that Rigel is one of the most prodigious stars in the known universe. It pumps out 40,000 times as much light as our own sun. And whereas Betelgeuse looks reddish because its surface is relatively cool, Rigel is literally white hot, about 20,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Now let's hunt down a couple of star clusters. Shift your gaze upward from Orion's belt by about two fists until you run into another bright beacon with a slightly orange cast. That's a red giant star called Aldebaran, and it marks the angry eye of Taurus the Bull. Aldebaran also serves as the anchor for a loose, V-shaped cluster of stars called the Hyades. In early evening, this V is lying on its side, with its bottom pointing to the right and its top, the bull's horns, pointing to the left. Depending on the darkness of your sky, you might be able to pick out anywhere from just a few to as many as 20 stars in the Hyades. Curiously, Aldebaran itself doesn't officially belong to the group. It's just a bright star that happens to lie between us and the cluster. Keep looking higher up in the sky, by about the width of another fist, until you see a fuzzy little spot that you can just cover with the tip of a finger. This is also a star cluster called the Pleiades. Another name for it is the Seven Sisters, or in Japanese, Subaru. You think I'm kidding, right? Well, the next time you see a Subaru on the street, check out the logo. It's a stylized group of stars. In Greek mythology, the Pleiades were the seven daughters of Atlas and Pleione. When Atlas angered some other gods, he was ordered to support the whole world on his shoulders as punishment. Devastated, his daughters all burst into tears, and to ease their sorrow, the head god, mighty Zeus, placed them together in the heavens. This cluster also appears in Native American legends. One story tells of seven Indian maidens who climb a tree stump to escape from bears. Eventually, the Great Spirit rescues the maidens from their perch and places them in the sky for safekeeping. If you've got a small telescope or even binoculars, take a close look at the Pleiades. You'll see that there are dozens of beautiful stars in this grouping, clumped together in the sky like fiery diamonds on black velvet. One other astro event occurs this month, but you won't see it unless you have access to a corporate jet and a big wad of cash for jet fuel. On the 26th, the Sun and New Moon converge in the sky to create an annular eclipse. This means the Moon goes right across the Sun, but the Sun's disk isn't completely covered, creating a stunning ring of sunlight in the sky. Sadly, the path of this event falls almost entirely over the Indian Ocean, though it clips the islands of Sumatra, Java, Borneo, and Celebes near its conclusion. Viewers in southern Africa, parts of Indonesia, and almost all of Australia have a chance to see a partial solar eclipse, but not us here in the Americas. If you want more sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Until next time, I wish you clear skies.